And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into Onto Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. We are here to talk about the Cubs, and I am here to remind myself that no matter how things look, it can always get worse. So I will remember that for myself and for you folks, which I speak backward-looking and forward-looking, that you could regard this weekend's sweep in Arizona as the manifestation of things can always get worse, or a prelude to a further disaster with things even getting worse from here. Okay, so how do we want to talk about this? I think folks listening probably already know that while it is certainly true, especially mathematically true, the Cubs can still make the playoffs. All good things can happen from here. But I just don't think you could be paying attention at all to this past series and the seven games that preceded it and not feel something of an inflection point. Not that it's that the season has sunk, because again, we've seen times we've had conversations on this very podcast about, like, well, it kind of feels like now this is the switch has flipped. You know, I remember a series in Anaheim when it was like, okay, time to start to get the sell underway. And of course they turned it around, and I don't want to act as if I know that that's not going to happen this time. But if I look at that as an example, that Anaheim series was still meaningful. There was still change after it because everybody had that same feeling. Like, we weren't on an island and being like, you know, this is bad. Because didn't they have, like, they had like a team meeting? And I mean, the perception was internal and external. And I just, there's no way that's not the case after this series in Arizona. Because as we talked about on the last episode, you could have talked about the series in Colorado as just one of those things. You know, it's just as whatever, it happens, Coors is weird, you know, maybe this could have gone this way, that way, and the Diamondbacks series that preceded it had two coin flip games, you know, whatever. It was easy enough to have a story if this series against the Diamondbacks in Arizona had gone better. But it was a disaster, and I think that has to now be discussed in context with this entire 10-game stretch.
Yeah, I think you can look at this road trip and say there are two games that stand out, right? And if you win those two games, you're not feeling great about things, but you're feeling so much better, right? It's the Tuesday game with all the base running mistakes in Colorado, and Saturday night in Arizona, that marathon extra inning game. I think Cubs fans, it's funny, you talk about the connected history of the Cubs and the Red Sox, right? The Red Sox, when they were, before they won it all, it was a bunch of like these moments, these crushing playoff moments, right? The Cubs, it was just like years of ineptitude. There were no crushing playoff moments because they didn't get there, right? So this feeling that's happening right now is kind of foreign to Cubs fans, because I was thinking about this probably in most of our lifetimes, counting the 80s, which I don't remember well, but I'm pretty sure it's 2001, maybe, if you want to count it. I don't really count it, but it's really 2004 and 2019 where the team was in the playoffs in the middle of September and collapsed, right? Like, those are the years that you point to, like, for Cubs fans, people that follow the Cubs, where it's just like, wow, this was a mess. No playoffs, and they were in perfect position to do that and maybe even do some damage. I don't know if you'd count this year as doing some damage, but it would have been nice to get there. And I don't want to talk about it like it's over, because a tiny bit of optimism here. Blue Jays fans were talking about it as if it were over on Thursday night. And they just swept the Red Sox, and they're back in the playoffs and feeling good. So you just need to get hot again. There's 2 weeks left, but there's a lot of things that just you look at and you're wondering, how do you overcome this? Candelario's injured, right? Alzolay and Fulmer on the IL. The bullpen, others have to step up. They really haven't. I mentioned how I was a little concerned about the starters, the young guys in Assad and Wicks. They both look a little rough right now. Wicks, I don't want to say that start was rough, but when you are where the Cubs were at that point, coming into last night's game, going down 3-0 immediately is just the worst possible thing to happen. He did a great job bouncing back and keeping them in that game, but not scoring in that first inning when they should have scored, and then immediately allowing three runs. It's like everything is going wrong. Cody Bellinger is cold. Justin Steele just had his worst start.
Probably should have fielded the best possible defense behind Wicks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just throwing that out there.
Just a quick thing on that. I'll say this.
I'm being somewhat cheeky.
I don't disagree, but not entirely cheeky. I don't disagree outside of the fact that when you're in a situation where the Cubs are with their offense, right? And you see the at-bats that Pete Crow Armstrong had at first, it's really hard to say.
Do I need to write down Tauchman's numbers over the last month and a half? Because they're shit.
Watch his at-bats and tell me that they're not significantly better than Pete Crow Armstrong, right. who looks like he cannot catch up to a fast. I'm not saying this is who he will be.
Eight at-bats.
I know, but how do you do that? How do you do that? How do you do that in the middle of a playoff race? Say, oh, I'll give him
because
more time.
Because it's dog to shit otherwise. Those are better at-bats. I've tried nothing, and I'm out of ideas.
Those are just obviously better at-bats by Michael Tauchman. I know the results aren't there, but they're obviously better at-bats. I think the defense may counteract that.
The defense outweighs it.
Yeah. I think the defense may counteract that, but this is a separate point
To be clear, to our friends
listening, they're losing for other reasons.
I'm buzzing in their ears. I'm not even yelling at Sahadev because it's not. He is correctly presenting.
It's just really hard to put him out there when this is happening. I don't disagree with fans who want to see him out there, but I understand the thought process behind it. Also, it's just bigger than that. It's just bigger. Bellinger needs to step up. Steele can't have that outing. The bullpen guys need to step up. That with other guys down, Kwas and Palencia primarily. There's not enough people stepping up when guys are not. Like, you can't blame Bellinger for a bad week because he's had monster season and stepped up all season long. So did he have moments where he needed to get a big hit and failed with the bases loaded and stuff like that? Absolutely. But it can't be put on him right now. It's time for other guys to step up and carry when he's going through a little bit of a moment. So, nobody's stepping up. Nobody's coming up with a big hit. Nobody's pitching, getting that shutdown inning. The extra inning games was just like every single moment was just like, what the hell is happening here half the time? It's one of these, like you said, it's an inflection point. Let's see if they can reset. They've done it all season long. I don't think any of us have a very good feeling about where this is going.
Yeah, I mean, 2023, if they don't make the playoffs, is going to be up there. It won't be as bad as 04 or whatever, 1969, but it will be the defining stretch of the season. And, I'm just doing a little quick math here. I know it felt like the Phillies snuck into the playoffs last year, and they did after getting swept at Wrigley, but they still won 87 games. And, for the Cubs to get there, they'd have to go 9-3 to get that last wild card. And, as you pointed out, Brett, they don't have the tiebreaker over, any of these teams except for the Giants, who are, kind of fading anyway. And so I did like your Red Sox comp as well, Sahade, because while I don't think this is a jobs are on the line type thing, but there's still massive ramifications when you fail this spectacularly at the most important time of the year. You have to wear it for the entire offseason. Reading all those kind of analysis pieces on Chaim Bloom's tenure. You're like, what do they reference? Like, where you finish in the standings, how many times you make the playoffs or not. And, you know, David Ross was on the verge of going from, you know, really admirable job in 2020, winning division title and kind of overseeing this transition with while playing a bad hand. And then making the playoffs this year would be an enormous accomplishment. And it's something that Jed Hoyer, who would be heading into year four of a five-year contract next year, could hang his hat on, hey, we made the playoffs. I mean, Cody Bellinger has already made himself a lot of money, but he could make even more with a huge October. I mean, Justin Steele wants to win a Cy Young Award and, like, take that into arbitration for the first time. Like, there's a ton riding on this. So I think the idea of, like, oh, well, I mean, they were only supposed to win 70-something games anyway. I was like, no, that's old news. Like, you have to look at what is right in front of you right now. And I don't have a whole lot of hope.
Yeah, we can discuss that in the offseason.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of, like,
right.
Hope right now watching this team. And, you know, I get why the Cubs and, you know, us at times, too, were saying, well, this team is probably better than the record indicates, right? Like, we're going back to June. Like, there are, you know, moves they can make. There are things they can move around. There are, you know, metrics that suggest, you know, underneath this, there's probably a better team. But I think watching this team recently, it's like, oh no, they're actually worse than they are. Like, they're, you know, they went all out
now, I agree,
to win two of their last 10 games. And that's clearly not good enough.
And it's not like it's all their fault. You know, it's not like we're entirely making a value judgment on this was obviously a mistake. This guy obviously stunk. This guy, you know, it's more, it's certainly more layered than that, and there will be time to unpack that in the future. But I think the point for today that I just could not more strongly agree with you guys is that I had visions of the end of season press conference. Okay, and I hope that they are wrong, but it's where the Cubs have missed the playoffs by a game or two. They have outplayed, I put up the old air quotes there, outplayed their preseason projections. And a lot of the commentary we hear coming from the front office and from maybe David Ross himself is, hey, you know, we did better than we were expected. Like, this is, you know, what were you thinking this year was going to be? I remember us saying, you know, in March, all we want is a competitive September, right? We want to be in the race in September, and that'd be a win. And it just churns my stomach to think about that stuff because it ignores the reality of where they really were. And it's not as if, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in memory 3, 4, 5 years from now, because that's all these things are, right? They're just memories of stories that we get to kick around in the years ahead. Maybe we will say, oh, you know, that was a fun year. There was a lot of fun stuff and they did better than they, you know, expected. I doubt it. I think it's more likely it's going to be held up like 2004 and 2019, unfair or otherwise. But I think that it makes me feel very ill to think about where the Cubs were 10 games ago, which is 4 games up for the second wild card and 2.5 out in the division. To fall from there to entirely out of a postseason spot, which they are as of now. I've seen a lot of people saying that they're tied with the Marlins for the last spot. Well, they're not, because the Marlins have the tiebreaker. So the Cubs are out. As of right now, they are out of the playoffs. To do that in 10 games, to fall behind, I think, 4 other teams, that swiftly is hard to do. You have to lose a lot of games in a short window of time, and to do it this late in the year it's going to be impossible for that not to be at least a subheading on the 2023 season. And it makes me sad for a lot of the players and a lot of the people who've done well this year, but I don't know another way around it. Like, that is how this is going to have to be discussed, pending what happens in the next 2 weeks.
Right. We have to keep saying that, right? I like I said, I don't think any of us are feeling positive right now, but we've all felt very negative about this team over the course of the year, and they've turned things around and looked better. Like you said, losing that 4-game lead and being where they are now in a span of whatever 10 games is incredible, but so is the fact that they got into this wild card race at all, right? In this, how quickly they did, right? It was a pretty quick time where we were only talking about the division, and then suddenly they're like solidly in this wild card, like in taking control almost. It's I mean, some of the, like, I think you can dismiss some of the early games. And now I think Patrick said it perfectly, because I was watching that entire series in Arizona and like even Colorado. And I was like, they're just, they don't look like a good team right now. They don't, like, we talked about it so much, but missed opportunity against the Marlins early in the year. And now that's really biting them, right? They never looked this bad when they were losing those one run games, losing this those close games. I always felt like it's all it is the big hit. If they just got the big hit and could, even though the bullpen gave up a run or two, it was like so low scoring. It was like, this really is, the offense just needs to come up with a big hit. That's not the case right now. Now it's like everything that's going wrong is, it's not going wrong to the extent where they're losing 12-3, but it's going wrong to the extent that they're not climbing out of a hole, or they're not coming up with a big hit, or they're not getting, you know, coming through it in moments defensively when they need to. It seems like every play that's being made is being made by the other team, right? There were in the extra inning games, I felt like there was like four balls that they hit down the line that the first base or third baseman like just snagged and really like, I thought that was going to be a double. Oh no, that's an easy out. Like, so you, like a rally that started or a rally that didn't even get going was snuffed because of, you know, just a bounce here and there. And I'm not saying they're not playing well enough for those things to overcome those things is the thing. It's like, you may have a bounce here and there that helps you out and lets you win a game, but they're just not even, they're not creating enough of those. So but I did notice that, especially in that extra inning game, it seemed like, oh man, they're just not one single thing is going to go their way today. Huh? And that's how it went. And they didn't play well enough to overcome those. You know, there's something I said last week and I just looked it up. They have 5 home runs this month with men on base. 5. That's it. Like, that's not acceptable. Like, you have to slug. You have to knock guys in. I think this week they had, like, not very many home runs in hitters' ballparks. I know Arizona isn't a great home run ballpark, but you need to get extra bases there. I don't think they had very many extra bases. With men on base, they had 2 extra base hits all over the 2 series. That's it. Like, you're not going to win games when that happens. You have to knock these guys in. Like, they just, it's a problem. Starting pitching wasn't good enough. I don't think they got a quality start this road trip. And the bullpen guys just aren't stepping up. So there's a lot of little things. One small thing, Brett, it doesn't matter, but Mike Tauchman wasn't the issue. He had a 14% walk rate this road trip. He got on base over 400. I know the defense matters, but he was putting up good at bats. He had a 115 weighted runs created plus. Like, that wasn't the reason they lost. They lost because they're not hitting.
Listen,
with men
I don't
on
want
base.
This to turn into like that I'm shitting all over Mike Tauchman, because I think his overall body of work this year has been fantastic, and it was quite an effort. But... However, first of all, you can't yada yada over the defense, because if we were setting up a discussion about whether it was a good decision to have him playing in center field or PCA in center field, it wasn't just that PCA is like, oh, he's better. No, Tauchman was affirmatively bad.
Yeah,
there were several plays that were affirmatively bad out there in ballparks, specifically Chase. That's a tough, huge center field. Like, it was not a small decision, that difference between those two. And offensively, I mean... I'll have to kick it to Patrick to buy me some time while I pull up Fangraphs, but I do believe his overall performance, you'd have to really play with the endpoints to find
it's just the road
stretch.
Trip. That's all
but
I'm talking about.
I could be wrong.
It's just the road
trip. I'll look at the road trip. Patrick's going to cover me with some good thoughts, and then I'm going to hit you, and I could be wrong. I'll be wrong live on this
right
podcast. Oh, no.
What stood out to me, I thought Eduardo Perez did a great job jumping on it last night, like Christopher Morel with the bases loaded runs out of the base pass. Like, Christopher Morel is a wonderfully talented, exciting young player, but this is almost the end of his second full season in the big leagues. I mean, we're talking about September 18th. It was September 17th yesterday when this happens. Like, you know, as Perez said, you run over that second baseman, or you kind of give yourself up. You can't just run out of the base pass and give them this easy double play with the bases loaded. And that's like a little thing that I would actually, like, that's the type of thing that in my mind is what the subtext to what David Ross is saying about a lot of this stuff when he says, I want a veteran at bat, or like, you know, it's just calm out there. Like, if David Ross talks about, I know what winning looks like. I've been on World Series teams. Jed Hoyer has constructed World Series winning teams. So, Brett, I do think they'll have to put on some happy spin if they don't make the playoffs, but I do think there's going to be a lot of frustration and anger. Like, I don't think they're going to, like, if they're eliminated, say, the second to last day of the season in Milwaukee, and then if Jed does his press conference at Wrigley a couple days later, like, I don't think there's a whole lot of happy spin to put on this. Like, certainly there are things that you can legitimately point out as positive developments, and that's not, like, gaslighting people, but, like, I go back to, you know, Alex Cora was asked about, you know, the idea of, oh, Bloom not being able to see things through, and he was just like, he didn't really bite on that question, or at least that's the soundbite that I saw. He's like, well, this is a really tough business. It's hard on us, it's hard on our families, it's hard on the players, and you have to get results. And I do think the Cubs are feeling that right now. I mean, this is a, I guess all teams scapegoat coaches, but the Cubs sure like doing that, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, like, these are the type of thoughts that creep in, and, like, we can, you know, debate Talkman versus PCA, and we'll never really know the answer, but it is weird, right? Like, so there's got to be people who work for the Cubs who are not in uniform, like, why did we bring up PCA if we're not going to play him, right? Or, like, there are also probably coaches who are like, are you kidding me? Like, this guy is not ready to hit major league fastballs. You know what I mean? So, like, a collapse like this just opens up so many doors that the Cubs would rather not go through.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Just to put a postscript on the Talkman thing, I'm going to get angry letters from people that I'm like the world's leading Mike Talkman hater, which is,
I mean, the dude
not
did
accurate.
Save the season.
Championing, like, I was championing his cause at midseason, but I did want to note where I was coming from, which is that Sahadev is correct. Over the course of this road trip, slightly above average offensively. However, if you widen the lens to just a month, just 1 month.
Yeah, he's been rough.
About a 53 weighted runs created plus. That's unplayable. That's Tucker Barnhart.
I'd still say the at-bats are so much better than what Pete... Like, he did nothing in his at-bats.
It doesn't
those
matter.
Some of the worst at-bats I've seen this season, and I know he's a rookie, but you cannot do that in September.
Now I can't let this...
They were just bad at-bats. He can't catch up to a 95
mile. That's not true.
They were bad at-bats.
That's sorry. Bullshit. He took a really nice walk.
One walk.
One of his few plate appearances. He's had 10 plate appearances. He's had 10 plate appearances.
Yeah.
Like, I get
and
that
four
they,
strikeouts.
He got owned at the top of the zone by some very nice four-seamers. By the way, not alone in that series
right,
in Arizona.
Fine.
They were
I give up.
Eaten alive.
I'm just saying, you cannot
eat alive.
I understand not playing that person during the playoff race, but I agree with Patrick in the sense that there are people in this front office likely like, what the hell are we doing not playing our best center fielder? And it's a valid argument. I'm just saying those at-bats were really tough to say, like, yeah, I can put this guy in the starting lineup when our offense isn't coming up with a big hit in 10 days. This is the guy I want to put in my lineup when he...
Yeah, but I'm not saying that either.
Huh? I understand saying you're saying either. The defense trumps that. I'm saying it's really hard for a manager to say the defense trumps that, but I like, you know what? I'm not worried about the offense right now.
He does
I just
it with
want
Nick
the defense.
Madrigal at third base every... Here, I'll just say out loud what we're really getting at. I think there have been some really poor playing time decisions over the last month.
Who are
and I think
you playing
the root
at third
of it
base?
Is, that's not the point. I would be playing Nick Madrigal. That's
right.
My point. Because the defense trumps. That's
no,
what
but
I'm
there's
saying.
There's nobody else.
That is
it's
what
not
I'm
like
saying.
This offense to trump that. Patrick Wisdom isn't like putting up monster numbers. He only does it against
Actually,
certain
that's
pitchers.
Not
enti- he only
that's
puts it up against certain
accurate.
Pitchers.
The decision was helped by the fact that Jamer Candelario has quietly stunk. But the point being, I do support Nick Madrigal being the third baseman because he's so good defensively.
I just don't think that that's the right comparison.
But even setting that aside, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I'm going to write this up. I shouldn't spoil it. But, okay, and I'm not I'm not saying that that what's happened is on David Ross. That's not what I'm saying. I do think there's a conversation to be had about what is the best direction going forward. I do think we've reached that point where there should at least be a conversation. But I do not like, I'm hot about the notion that going back to when Alexander Canario came up, and I'm not talking about playing him, because I don't, you know, he might not have been ready either. But the way that was discussed was, I'm going to play the guys that got us here. I got to play their bench is depth, whatever. I got to play with the guys that got me here. Okay, yeah, maybe I could see that. But then in the same breath, not 3 days later, I got to look at the dates. This is what I'm writing about. David Ross is saying, hey, you know, yeah, we struggled a little bit. This was this was the end of the course trip. We just finished 27 games in 27 days. Guys are tired. It's really hard. Yeah, they're fucking tired because nobody got a day off. Do you know the core guys? Do you know how many days off they got during the 27 games? You know how many games they sat? Zero. Zero. So you do not get to say, this was really tough. This was really tough because we had 27 games in 27 days and they're wearing down. Da, 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 da. Well, it's not like you had to. It's not as if you couldn't have given someone a break.
It's
and
the
we
stretch
know
run. It's the stretch run. Yeah, I get the quote, but you're not sitting those guys. Don't sit those guys. I would criticize him more for sitting his best guys in that moment when it's the stretch run.
I understand you wouldn't, because you know who sat.
But I don't think you sit your core guys in the stretch run. I get you want them to get a rest, but that's looking at it now. Like, Dansby Swanson, everybody's criticizing all of a
it's
sudden.
It's not looking at it now when I was saying it 3 weeks ago.
I don't think they
I was
look
writing
tired.
About these guys need a rest.
I don't think they look tired. I think they're just not coming through with moments. People are saying Dansby Swanson looks tired. I don't think so. He's hitting the ball hard, and he made a couple defensive miscues in the sense that he shouldn't have thrown to second when Corbin Carroll was on first base. And I don't really know what happened in that whatever inning that was, 14th, 13th inning with the ball that went off Wisniewski. That was weird, and I still don't fully understand it. But other than that, like, why are people saying Dansby Swanson looks tired? He's hitting the crap out of the ball better than he did in most of August. So, like, he doesn't look tired. Not at the plate. He looks fine. I'm not sure who needed a break. Maybe Bellinger, but then you're taking out your best bat. Ian Happ's been good. Ian Happ's looked good, not defensively, obviously, with that play that he made in Colorado. I mean, maybe Morel. I'm not sure who needs this break. Nico Horner, who's been hitting well. Yan Gomes, who came up with the one clutch hit all road trip. I just don't know who needs a break of these regulars, right? Those are the regulars that Seiya, he's been hot. Like, so all the guys that are regulars, they're not the ones that are like that
the
are
numbers
causing
don't
this issue.
We can't do it on the podcast, but I'll be writing it up.
Bellinger's
the numbers
one
generally.
That, Bellinger's the only
they
one.
Don't support.
Swanson got hot.
No, it's not.
After everyone Swanson got hot.
You're wrong.
After everyone wanted him to sit.
You are remembering a 4-game stretch where he was contacting the ball well.
And he hit the ball well in
and
in
he
Arizona.
Hasn't had a day off. He hasn't had a day off since June. Unless you can, like a planned scheduled Cubs game day off, he has not had.
Wasn't he injured?
And I understand that's his thing. But You want to look at his numbers in that stretch?
Yeah, they're bad, not but great. Then he got hot again. He's been
because
hitting
the margins, because the margins for error when you have a roster like this that is not a loaded roster, and we know this game, this sport at the highest level, the difference between good and bad is just tiny.
And also,
it's just a
tiny difference. he's the one, like, if you sit him, your defense downgrades significantly, right? So it's like, it's the same Pete Crow Armstrong talk.
Lose the battle to win the war, and they're losing the war.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I just don't think he's gassed, because I think he's hitting the ball well. He didn't come up big in a couple situations. There was a runner on third, less than two outs, that he should have driven the guy in, right? I get it. Like, there's moments. I just don't think it's like that's
Cody's
the
main one, by the way.
Yes. Bellinger's looking, a mess. I don't know. I don't know if that's rest or what, but it's also.
He got
just
those DH starts because Ross said he's dealing with some bumps and bruises. Yeah. And it's like, especially in hindsight, but I was saying this in foresight. You look at that and it's like, give the guy a day then.
I get it. I get what you're saying. I just think it's really tough to do that at this point in time. Like, sitting guys when you're like fighting for that playoff spot, you can sit when the season's over. You can sit when.
Yeah, and your team will be worse for it, and you'll collapse in September like they have.
That's fair. Like, that's what's happened, so that's fair. I just don't. I won't sit. I don't think sitting your core guys is a smart move when you're trying to fight for a playoff spot. But I get what you're saying.
Here, I'll turn it around. I'll turn it around on myself. I'll dump on myself with one point. You know who did always rested his guys throughout the season? He picked a day and he'd rest his guys, and he did get crapped on for it, but he'd pick like an off day and then he'd give a guy
Joe Madden was great at that.
Joe Madden did it. And you know what happened in 2019? They collapsed down the stretch. So, you know, maybe it doesn't matter.
Brett, I'm totally...
ultimately, nothing matters.
I'm totally with you. Like, I can't wait for the statue outside of Wrigley for the walk that Pete Crow Armstrong drew against the Rockies. Like, that was amazing. But I do think this gets to the... Yes, the
two sack bunts
point
also.
Of like...
No, he failed on one of them.
That's right. Sorry. That was the real reason. That is the real reason.
I do think some of like what Ross says when Marquee is recording every pregame and every postgame thing on TV, like, it's sort of gibberish sometimes. Like, his job is not to be a lawyer to make a
absolutely
compelling opening statement and like thread the needle and then do this brilliant closing statement. Like, there the Cubs rise to hold. He has to say some stuff on camera, and like, he's generally informative and helpful, but like, I think pinning too many quotes to him here and there is probably not the best way, but I get what you're saying. Ultimately, it just has to work, right? So like, it doesn't matter what you say if you win the games, and I do think this gets to a broader point of like, is this team that good? Like, I mean, clearly, you know, they need to do something at third base. They're either going to have to re-sign Bellinger or replace his production in different ways. Like, I don't look at that lineup card and the names in the bullpen and think like, okay, like, got a lot to work with here. Like, and for me, that's not even really making excuses for Ross as much as I'm curious, like, it's really hard to tell where, like, the front office, I've said this before, the front office ends and the coaching staff begins, right? And so a lot of what Ross does is what the front office gently suggests or is, you know, shaped by information presented by the people upstairs. And, you know, for now, it feels like they're all kind of in this together. I mean, I do think that there are individual decisions throughout. I mean, this is what some Jed Hoyer said to me, like, in May or even April when some of this stuff popped up. He's like, you know, me and Theo would sit in the box and argue about probably thousands, if not millions, of decisions over the course of our career. Like, that's what baseball people do. That's what fans do. That's what reporters do. But this is just a very inopportune time to kind of leave you and your staff open to second guessing on stuff like we'll never know.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's where I also have to be honest too, that for as hot as I might get and as firmly as I might make a point, even I know deep down, lot of this is ultimately unknowable. A lot of it is informed by information we don't have. A lot of it is someone outside the game looking in and trying to evaluate on the basis of decisions that may have been guided in ways that I don't understand, or if I had, you know, a better scope to those things, I might have a better understanding. So I do, you know, I hate to affix the lasers on any one person in these situations, especially because even if this like bad stretch, this 2-8 stretch that maybe winds up sinking the season, even if it were ascribable to decisions David Ross made, like even, let's say it was 100% because he didn't rest guys because whatever this and that. Well, what about the rest of the season? I think it's pretty clear that he sussed out some great performances from guys. I actually think the bullpen usage got to a really good place. I think guys are very motivated to play for him. So even that conversation is a nuanced one. That's why I say I don't really get quite in yet with the folks who are like, David Ross, you're out. This was it. You know, if they missed the playoffs, he's got to go. Well, you know, part of the reason they were in the playoff discussion in the first place was in part, I think, because of his performance this year. And so I think that's a little eager to dump a guy. But I do think that has to be a conversation in concert with an entire top down of like, okay, what were the successes this year? What were the failings? What could we have done better in April and May? Because April and May matter just as much as August and September in the final accounting. So that's the thing is, that's also why I hate like debate shows. You know, we never fire back and forth like this because in part, once we're done, I'm kind of like, yeah, but I don't know.
I would still have given Pete Crow Armstrong a start, at least in Arizona. So I'm just trying to give like his thought process here more than anything. And I think the biggest thing we need to remember when we talk about managers nowadays is it's not about just purely in-game decision-making, right? Or lineup construction. A lot of these things are talked about for hours on end between games, between the front office and the manager. How often are they on the same page? And do you believe there's someone out there that you can hire that's going to be on the same page with you more often than the person that you have? That's why Joe Maddon's not in this spot. Everybody can talk about, you know, if he's a better manager than David Ross or not. He wasn't on the same page with the front office. And that happened in Anaheim as well. He's just not fit for this era of baseball right now, right? It doesn't work. Not with these types of front offices. Maybe there's a front office that still exists that could handle a manager like him. But for the most part, no. Like, that's not how it works anymore. And until we know that they're just not on the same page and they, like, there's way too many disagreements, I don't really consider him on the hot seat. You can disagree with things all you want. I think sometimes people, take a quote and twist it and think that this is like, well, Jed Hoyer said this and David Ross said this. I think what Patrick said is spot on. David Ross isn't a public speaker. He's like a motivational guy for his players. Like, baseball players love him. Like, former ball players love him. They really see something in him where he gets the most out of them. He motivates them. I've talked to people about this. Like, not just the current players, but like other former players. And when he talks like one-on-one or in a group setting where the cameras aren't there, like, the players get fired up. They like what he has to say. It's very different than Joe Maddon presenting a bunch of art pieces in spring training and showing and explaining what they mean to the team and how, like, you know, and his philosophical like leanings in baseball. Like, I'm not saying Joe Madden's a bad manager. I'm saying like he connected differently and they needed something different after Joe Maddon, and he connected with the group in a way that just wasn't happening anymore. Whether he's making enough good decisions is certainly up for debate. I just don't know if it's up for debate in the front office. That's all that matters. Like, we can nitpick moves here and there. Is the front office saying, like, you know what? We understand this. We've gone over this. We understand why this guy's batting here. We understand why this guy's sitting. We understand why this guy's being called up in the bullpen in this moment, because we've talked about it 1,000 times. And we understand it, and we understand that some of these are 50-50 decisions. There's slightly more here, but we understand David Ross likes to go with his gut, and he explains it to us. Whatever it is, there's likely some sort of agreement there. And until there's not, it's just not really something that's on my radar as far as him being let go. And granted, it could be getting there. Maybe there's been enough in the past month or two, because this is the heat of a pennant race, and these matter even more. These decisions become more scrutinized, and the front office is like, we're not on the same page enough. And this is, and we believe it's costing us 2 wins, you know, over the past 2 months. And that's enough for us to be like, nope, sorry, we need to be on the same page. I haven't heard an inkling of that yet. So until we do, we have to kind of look at this in a different way. Other than that, you know, win games. There's some crappy teams coming up. Beat them. How about that? Like, how about the players just step up and hit a home run with the man on base? And get a few shutdown innings. I think that's the bottom line now. It's on everybody. I'm not absolving Ross. Ross has his fingerprints on this team as well. So everybody just needs to get their crap together and play better baseball and put the best lineup out there and make sure these starters aren't gassed or exposed now, especially the young guys. I'm a little concerned with the young guys in Assad and Wicks. We didn't even talk about Stroman. Don't know what the hell's going on there, and I guess we'll find out soon enough if he's going to be stretched out to be a starter. But I think
he came into the second game. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah.
All right. Guess we'll see. I was going to say, Mooney, I don't know if you had anything else for wrap, but I was just going to wrap with, ultimately, none of this absolves the players themselves, of course, because even if you made the argument, they were a little worn down, a day here or there might have kept them fresh. I mean, ultimately, they are still professionals that want to be out there 162 games, and their impact on game outcomes is massively, massively more important than anything anyone else that touches upon the games can have. And this month, the Cubs are the worst hitting team in baseball with runners on base by a lot, and it's really ugly. They're quite good with nobody on base. They've been quite good. But they have literally been the worst team in baseball with runners on base. And, you know, that is not something that's just on a manager. You know, that's a lot of guys that aren't performing when the game can be swung. And that's the story of it.
I will say, I think the hardest part about managing is having the charisma to be able to command a room full of millionaires, multimillionaires, guys who think they should be millionaires. Like, you're constantly pissing off these kind of individual contractors who have a very short shelf life to make a huge amount of money or go back out into the workforce with like no other applicable skills. Like, it's, you have ownership, you have a front office, you have a media to deal with. Like, I think you kind of see that maybe now with the White Sox, how hard it is to kind of herd all of these different things and kind of keep the peace and make different compromises without totally losing your identity. And I do think David Ross's demeanor is probably perfect for when the Cubs show up on Tuesday at Wrigley. If the clubhouse opens, whatever, 2 or 3 o'clock for the media, like, they'll be going about their routine just like any other game. And that ultimately, I think, is the strength of David Ross and what will bind him with this front office for a while now. I mean, obviously he's under contract, but I just think that, you know, we've joked before about, like, you know, Jed Hoyer should put on a uniform and manage the team. Like, it's not as easy as it looks. And I think it's just to have that kind of gravitas, that, you know, presence in front of the cameras, in front of the room, is extremely hard to find. And if you don't have it, seasons like this go down the toilet in June.
Yeah, maybe that's the extending the window into September is a reflection of the Cubs as a whole, including David Ross, being able to take an imperfect roster and keep it competitive. Maybe I'm doing the thing now that I was imagining Jed Hoyer at the end of the season saying, you know, hey, we were better than the projections. Well, it is true. I mean, that is true. But nevertheless, I'd still much rather see the Cubs have a nice couple of weeks to end the season and maybe keep themselves in the postseason. Just a thought on that.
And I think it's more fun when we argue too, Brett.
I mean, it's fun, but it's always one of those things, especially
when I barely agree with what I'm saying, but that's fine.
Well, that's the thing. We are both interested in making like a point that's not necessarily our point, but is like the point, you know, like I can argue this point, sometimes better for the bar than a podcast, but hopefully that was
still like it. Don't yell at me for daring to say that Pete Crow Armstrong shouldn't be hitting every day all the time.
I think it's crazy that Sahade thinks PCA will never be able to hit in the major leagues. Like, I just can't believe that he said those words and that I said, you know, that Mike Tauchman is ultimately the villain of the 2023 Cubs. It is wild that we went down that road. But that's what we do here on to Waveland, the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahade Sharma, Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. We will be back at you later this week as the Cubs try to lick some wounds and turn this thing around, which, as I said, is still very much possible. It's not as if they are irrevocably sunk this year, but it will take a turnaround akin to what we saw at midseason with this team. So hopefully we do. Hopefully brighter tenor next time we talk. But if not, we'll just go at each other. Maybe this will be an escalation for us. As the team sinks, we get hotter and hotter down the stretch. All right. Take care, folks. Have a great one.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.